Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Join online at fan590.com.
Have you got game?
Got game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
At sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Coming up on this week's show, it's arguably the most anticipated game of the year, and it's finally here. We'll have our review of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. As well, Christine Chubb has her review of the long-awaited game, Skyrim. Plus, we'll dive in depth into the crazy world of Saints Row the Third and tell you how you can win yourself a Kinect Sports Season 2 prize pack.
Have you got game?
Kind of has a Russian ballet feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like this. This is interesting. This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as we're played in, not with our usual theme music, but...
Can you guess what game this came from?
Of course, it's Tetris.
Yes, this
anyway,
is Tetris.
Knows that.
Yeah, it was all done by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. They sent us a CD, like last week, and they said, you know, here is a compilation of the greatest video game music of all time, which I think, saying it's the greatest video game music of all time is kind of a big... claim on their part, but you know what? It's pretty cool. I've been playing this on my iPod for the last week or so, and some of these songs are really sort of just growing on me. So I thought, why don't we do something cool? Why don't we give our listeners just sort of a taste of what the music is just by playing it as our intro music this week? And this is Tetris. We got a few more selections throughout the show. We'll get to those later, but we have Got Game to do, so
let's
game it up.
I like it. But this is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Momin Qureshi here, joined as always by Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb. And for the last few weeks, the gentleman on the line has joined us for Section 3 of the show where we do our reviews. This week, he's managed to squeeze in enough time between jury dutying to join us on the phone. He is one Zacharias Cooper. Zachary, how are you?
Doing well, feeling good. It's nice to be back for Section 1, baby.
Yeah. And what better way to start the show than... with the review of a game that was arguably, in my opinion, the most anticipated game of the year. It came out on Monday at midnight, Tuesday morning. There was hundreds of people lined up at Yonge Dundas Square around the world waiting for this game. Zach, before we started taping, you told me the figure was $400 million worth of merchandise was moved in its first few days.
24 hours.
In 24 hours. And we, of course, are talking about Call of Duty Modern Warfare number 3. The predecessor to this game, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, huge seller. Black Ops, the one that came after that, was the number one or still stands as the number one selling video game of all time. So definitely a lot of people looking forward to this. Interested to hear what Zach, yourself, and Brian have to say. Brian, set it up for us and tell us, how was it?
Actually, I just have a question for you quickly. I just want to know what exactly about this game, about the hype, made it your most anticipated game of this year.
It wasn't for me, my personal one, but I mean, obviously communicating with gamers the way we do over Twitter and Facebook and chatting with people, there's no question that this is the one that had the most buzz. When we went to E3, people were going crazy about it. I mean, Black Ops itself, number one selling game of all time. There's no question that this was, if not number one, way up on people's list. And in my opinion, it was the number one for most people this year.
It isn't just the consensus. They say it in the trailer, so it's got to be true.
That's right. That is also true.
Because nothing on the internet or television has ever lied to me.
Well,
I mean, Calhoun, you seem to be skeptical from the beginning. So tell us, why all the skepticism?
Skeptical since birth.
Well, going into this, I don't think I was excited as many people, because I felt that it was going to be a good game going into it. It's just that from what we saw from, you know, trailers and stuff like that, it seemed like they were going for the formula that works. But it's hard to get excited about that because it's a known quality. So let me just set up the story, though, because if you played Modern Warfare 2, you know that basically what happens is that there's a crazy general who gets a little upset about something that happened in the first Modern Warfare game. Basically, he felt that a lot of soldiers were being disrespected. So to make the world... you know, respect American soldiers, he starts World War III, which is, I guess, the expected response. Doesn't seem crazy at all. So in the game, you play as Soap McTavish, Captain Price, and a whole bunch of other random soldiers, and you basically start off the game trying to fight in World War III and defending the United States, but you slowly realize what's happening, what the true plot is. You go after the crazy colonel, and that's kind of basically what Modern Warfare 2 is. What Modern Warfare 3 is pretty much... basically more of that. You literally pick up in the campaign directly maybe not directly after, maybe like 2 or 3 hours after the events of the end of Modern Warfare 2. So it really does just move right into Modern Warfare 3. And throughout the game, you're basically trying to fight out that, you know, World War 3 and try and bring it to an end. And that's basically the story behind Modern Warfare 3, what you'll experience. And I guess the one question I really want to get out of the way before I move on is the whole Battlefield 3, Modern Warfare 3 comparison. Basically, Modern Warfare 3, sort of an action movie-ish sort of thing, Twitch gameplay, faster experience, good game. Battlefield 3, bigger sort of feel, more tactical, bigger maps, a little bit more realistic, not realistic at all, but...
I'm going to put it this way. You know, Call of Duty, the franchise, is Hollywood, and Battlefield, the franchise, is like the documentary. And to me, I don't think anyone does Hollywood or action cinematics like Infinity Ward has done with Modern Warfare, and as we had seen before with Black Ops as well. I mean, you know, it does pick up right where you left off. It's basically Russia against the rest of the world, and you're bouncing around in different spots, and you're trying to, you know, suppress the enemy forces. You're trying to find cargo. You're basically trying to turn the war back on the Russians. And, you know, there's really not too much of the narrative that really hits home, but it's not the story that you're getting into a Call of Duty game for. It's the experience. And I don't think Modern Warfare 3 struggles at all. I think it succeeds in every facet. And, you know, Calhoun, you talk about the fact that it just sort of picked up where it left off, and, you know, they went with a recipe that works, and why not? I mean, it's not going to change everything, but, you know, you've got somewhat of a new story. You've definitely got the new experience, which is fun to play through. You get about, I'd say, 8 to 10 hours worth, and it's quality. I mean, I think the levels themselves have probably been shortened, but the intensity and the amount of tension that gets built up in some of these levels in particular, it just gets ramped through the roof. So I think it's probably done by design in that regard, and I've absolutely loved it. I'm curious, though, Calhoun, when you first got your Modern Warfare 3, did you go to the campaign, or did you do multiplayer?
Campaign first, because I always do campaign first, because I play games for stories. I just like stories in general, so that's normally where I tend to lean.
And so that might be why you were a little bit disappointed.
But here's the thing. I agree with most of what you're saying, and I should probably preface everything I'm about to say by saying that this is a great game, and at some point it almost feels like I'm sort of nitpicking at, you know, the pieces of it, but I didn't like the campaign in Modern Warfare 2, just like I didn't like the campaign in Battlefield 3. But here's the difference. In Modern Warfare 2, I didn't like the campaign until after I was done, until I sat there and thought about it. Because once you're in the game, you press start, and it's like a roller coaster of explosions. Things are blowing up, buildings are falling down, crazy stuff is happening all the time. It's one giant set piece after the other. So you get distracted. But once you break it down, what you really realize is that you're pretty much doing three things throughout the game. You're either following a guy who has a little sign above his head that says follow, and you basically got to do exactly what he's doing. You're either breaching doors, and I think I breached more doors in this game than I did in the last two Modern Warfare's put together, or you're sitting in a turret trying to take out unbelievably large numbers of bad guys coming at you. And that's pretty much what the campaign is. So,
well, I don't think you're really doing it justice either. If you boil it down, and those are definitely the three biggest ingredients, but there are elements where you're infiltrating a sub, you're escaping on a lifeboat. I mean, there are many different aspects to the game which you can't just simply ignore because they're not, you know, bigger parts of the campaign.
I think I can explain what I'm trying to say this way, that the first two Modern Warfare games, they tried to at least say something, you know, whether intentionally or not. The first one was kind of a commentary on the realities of nuclear weapons. The second one, sort of the realities of terrorism. I think in our world where we play video games so much, where these things are constantly put in our face, we kind of become a little dull to the realities of these things happening in the real world. And, you know, Modern Warfare 1 and 2 kind of were little quick shots to our systems to sort of wake us up, to remind us about these sort of things, you know, that these are video games, but atrocities are really happening in the real world. Modern Warfare 3 didn't have anything like that. In fact, I finished the campaign like 24 hours ago, maybe less. I can't explain to you a single thing that happened into it. I don't remember.
Well, there's not too much of the narrative because it's come to the point where World War III is already upon us. All you do is fight. I don't expect the same, you know, social commentary that you do from my first-person shooters, I guess. And I've absolutely no problem with the campaign. But everyone knows, you know, most people will pick up Modern Warfare 3 because of the multiplayer. And that's why Black Ops will probably take a huge dip as far as online activity because the multiplayer is so strong. Let's talk about some of that then, because I absolutely love it. I think they've done a great job of pacing it a little bit more, where you can't just buy whatever you want. You unlock certain things. They've separated it so you've got your own personal levels, and then you can level up each particular weapon as well. And I think that's fantastic, because it basically implements an idea of proficiency. So the more you use a weapon, the better you get at using said weapon, and it becomes much more fluid. The one thing I will say that I don't like about the multiplayer is basically just the font and the interface. It seems kind of outdated, and I'm not so big on the fact that a lot of the maps are strictly pulled from the campaign, but other than that, I think it's great. And, you know, we've seen, you know, upwards of 2 million people online within the first 24 hours of this game, and it's something special. I mean, they know what they're doing at Infinity Ward. The whole Call of Duty franchise has been, you know, just an upward trend. I don't know if they've peaked just yet, but, you know, the multiplayer is something special, and there's Spec Ops as well, which was obviously missing from Black Ops because it was zombies with the other studio, with Infinity Ward.
With Treyarch, yes.
Yes. Spec Ops, so that's basically co-op, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, I was you can do your basic horde mode or survivalist, as they put it, which is waves upon waves, and you level up separately from that than you would in your normal multiplayer. And then they also have specific challenges, which a lot of people will remember from Modern Warfare 2, and they all have, I think, 16 different challenges, and a lot of time could be spent in those, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, I can't deny it. In fact, when Black Ops came out, I was kind of missing those Spec Ops challenges from the game, but you realize that, you know, there is Treyarch that does Black Ops, that did, I believe it was Call of Duty World at War, but whatever. And then you have Infinity Ward, who is doing the Modern Warfare series. Yep. And when one comes out, I kind of feel upset that certain parts of the other game are not there. And this time, it was the fact that the wager matches were not there anymore. Mm-hmm. They had been taken out, and they had been replaced by the Spec Ops mode, which breaks down into missions, into, I think it was 16 missions, maybe 15 missions.
Yeah.
And then they have their own sort of Horde mode, which is kind of like the Horde from Gears of War 3, in a sense, where you start off with a single pistol, you have to take someone out.
You're not setting up a base, but you can get unlockables and whatnot. I know we're running short of time. I just want to mention as well, you know, all that's awesome. And there's also Call of Duty Elite, which, unfortunately, just like Battlefield, they had their issues with Battlelog. You know, I was given a hardcore edition from Activision, and they sent me, you know, a year subscription for Elite, and unfortunately, the service has been down, and I haven't had a chance to try that out. But it's their subscription service that basically does a ton of stat tracking. In theory, you get, you know, statistical analysis of all the maps, overhead views, strategy, videos, everything, and a lot of it's based on the social interaction as well through Facebook integration and everything. But unfortunately, at least for this first week since Modern Warfare 3 launched, that hasn't been, useful, because it's not up and running. It's I know anyone who is subscribed has been given an extra 30 days free, or at least additional to whatever they've paid already. But that's that, and I wanted to mention that it's out there. It's just not really working just yet.
All right, so let's break it down. You guys have both had time with the game, both online and through campaign. Give us a score. Is it worth all the hype?
Yes. I give Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 a 9 out of 10. The multiplayer is fantastic. Spec Ops is great. And the campaign is it's good enough to keep the blood pumping.
Yeah, you know what? The only thing I really disagree with that is the fact that in multiplayer, you got to sort of level up your gun and your character separately. I wasn't a huge fan of that. I thought, you know, there was too many carrots and too many sticks. It was overcomplicated. It didn't really add anything to the game. It's okay as, you know, sort of a mechanic, but there really was no purpose to it. But like I said before, everything that I've said right now kind of feels like I'm nitpicking at the game, because when you put it together, when you're actually inside the game, when you're playing it, I mean, you can tear it apart afterwards as much as you want, but when you're in the moment, you know, you are lost in that game. Like I said, it's a roller coaster ride. And if you want it, you can get it. You know, I would give it a 9.5 out of 10. I think it's a great game. I nitpicked it a little bit, but get it if you want it.
And quickly, a bunch of new modes, bunch of new perks, which is very cool. Kill Confirm is amazing. It's one of the new multiplayer modes where you basically kill someone, then you need to get the dog tags or prevent them from taking your team's dog tags if one of your guys gets killed. It's wicked. It's awesome. Modern Warfare 3, tons of fun.
All right, so Zach gives Modern Warfare 3 a 9 out of 10. Brian gives it a 9.5 out of 10. Quickly wanted to mention we have two Kinect Sports Season 2 prize packs to give away, including a branded rally towel and the new Kinect Sports Season 2 for the Xbox 360. To win, you have to enter the code Kinect, that's K-I-N-E-C-T, in the fan club at sportsnet590.ca before 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, November 27th for 590 points, and your chance to win this Kinect Sports Season 2 prize pack. Still to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590, a little later on, Christine Chubb will review the game that she's been talking about all year long, and she kind of disappeared for a couple weeks as she played this game. We're talking about Skyrim, and we will get an in-depth look at Saints Row the Third. This game looks crazy. That's all to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Have you got game?
Well, we've gotten serious all of a sudden. We went from like happy-go-lucky Tetris in segment one to very serious.
But tell me, you gotta know where this is from. I'll give Christine a pass if she doesn't get this, but if you don't get this, I'm hosting this show.
I want to say Halo? No?
This is Got Game. I am your host, Brian
Calhoun. No, that's not happening. This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Momin Qureshi, joined as always by Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, and Zach Cooper on the phone.
Momin, you do not recognize Uncharted?
Oh my god, I feel so bad. You don't want to know what the sad part is? This just occupied such a huge part of my life.
Yes.
So there's
it's not like that music occupies so much of the game, though. I mean,
it's not like it's at every load screen and every time you move on, it plays. Yeah, it's not. That doesn't happen. So we just talked in our last segment where we talked about a review for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which Zach gave a 9, Brian gave a 9.5, both out of 10. And some people took the Modern Warfare part a little seriously. Some dudes in France, five of them, stole 6,000 copies of Modern Warfare 3 by hijacking two trucks that were in the process of delivering the game to retailers. According to a French newspaper, the two trucks were robbed separately. The first time, a pair of men rammed the trucks with their car and then smoked out the delivery man of the truck's cab with tear gas. The second truck was taken by three men who used a handgun to convince the driver to exit the truck. I love that. Exit the truck. As in, like, they grabbed him and chucked him out. The robbers then drove off with the truck and the merchandise in the back. It's estimated that the merchandise is worth $1.1 million.
So, obviously, the first question is, where was Brad Pitt and George Clooney when all this was happening? Because this sounds like it's coming straight out of a movie. Like,
yeah, well, you know
who
what?
I was asking that.
I wasn't asking that. But have you guys seen Heat, the movie Heat?
Yes.
No.
There's a scene in Heat where they do this, where they take a truck and they ram over a delivery truck and they take all the stuff that's inside.
No.
But it seems like these guys were basically just trying to run a Modern Warfare mission in real life, because that's some...
Yeah, the real question is, where were Val Kilmer and Robert De Niro?
Exactly.
And why was Al Pacino busy and not stopping this?
Exactly. That's the real
Stop
question.
Stop stealing my jokes.
We're not stealing your jokes. We're fixing them.
Well, at this point, I'd say probably the happiest people in the world, maybe EA Games, because, you know, with all the stuff that they've put in their games now, with all these codes you have to enter, those games, in a way, can kind of be tracked. You can kind of figure out who's putting in what codes, and you can kind of figure out where those codes came from. You know, if these are just the ordinary editions of Modern Warfare, they've gotten away scot clean, as far as I can figure out. I mean, there's no real way to figure out where the games came from.
Well, Detective Calhoun, they do have serial numbers and batches, and they could potentially track them down. I don't know if they're going to find them after the fact.
But. Yeah,
you have to rely on actually getting your hands on a random copy. That's kind of difficult, though. But
I mean, if you got a hot copy of Modern Warfare 3, you should be smart enough not to try to put in any like codes or whatever, and just maybe play a campaign. And I guess you could play online multiplayer. But.
There is no code to unlock the multiplayer in the game. You know, you can buy the Elite service separately on top of everything using, you know, Microsoft points or money on the PlayStation, but there is no actual code you have to enter in to play any parts of the game. It's not locked behind a code.
Well, a game that is coming out this Tuesday, and it's a game that we all tried at X11 and saw when we were at E3. The advertising for this game was everywhere, and they were going all out with,
they went all out. It was ridiculous.
With the scantily
and
clad
awesome.
Women and the
there was a pimp.
Pimpified men, and we're talking about Saints Row the Third, We had a chance to try this out at X11 a little while ago, and it's the way I described it when I was trying it out then was it's GTA on acid.
Yeah.
And that's hard to believe because it's GTA itself, it seems like, is on acid. But we want to give you a little bit more of an in-depth look at the game, so we called up Volition Games and spoke to Scott Phillips, who's the lead designer on the game, and Greg Donovan, who's the producer, and we talked about Saints Row the Third on Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The team's focus and goal was to create an over-the-top game. I think that Saints Row 2's identity was established as like, you know, a very unique open-world game, and we're going to we took what worked on Saints Row 2 and really improved upon that. It was a kind of a no-holds-barred approach where it's, you know, we found out that our players really like the focus on fun, you know, over-the-top, crazy, ridiculous action-based sequences where, as you're playing the game, we want players to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm experiencing this and seeing it. I can't believe that Volition's doing this. So that was one of the pillars of the project, even in early pre-production.
I was going to say, what is it about drop-kicking hookers that makes this game so much fun?
Well, yeah, I'd like to say that we're an equal opportunity offender. You can drop kick other pedestrians as well. There's just something visceral about it. When you have an open world game, you know your players are going to kind of get into that juvenilian mindset and mess around with the world. And it's our job to make sure that we give them the appropriate fun toys and tools in which to do that.
So let's talk about the storyline of the game. I understand, like the previous two, you're the leader of the Third Street Saints, and you're fighting a couple of rival gangs, but there's a big difference between this one and the first two in the sense that the stories this time aren't separated. They're very much interconnected. So tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, we wanted to bring all of the gangs into the main arc. We didn't want them separate so that, you know, one thing that happened in one arc would never touch another arc, and so one character could never appear in another area. We wanted to make it a little more cohesive and get everything happening all at once. And then, you know, when we bring in an additional military force later on in the game, they kind of pit themselves against both you and the other gangs. So you get this big kind of three-way war going on. It all just brings together, and the over-the-top nature of the game fits in all of those missions. And, you know, the gangs are crazy over-the-top, and the military brings in tools that are crazy over-the-top as well.
Yeah, we both had a chance to try out this game a few weeks ago at an Xbox preview event, and it was definitely the game that I came away from that event where thinking that game was so much fun, and it was like a definite trip while you're playing that game. Now, one of the things I understand also is that there are a lot of celebrities who have lent their voices to this game, so maybe run down who's involved in the game.
Let's hear about the Hulkster.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan voices the character Angel De La Morte. He's one of many city contacts that you get, and these city contacts are citizens of Steelport, where Saints Row the Third takes place, and they have a vested interest in helping the Saints take down the Syndicate, the main antagonist. So, Hulk is voicing Angel De La Morte. Sasha Gray is voicing one of the twins of the Syndicate, Viola De Winter, and Daniel Day King comes back to voice Johnny Gat, one of the most iconic of the Saint members, and there's actually a couple others that we haven't announced yet, and we're going to let players experience and discover that on their own.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple names, obviously, that sparked a lot of intrigue when it was first announced as well, and one of them was Sasha Gray. Is that trading up from Tara Patrick, or, how do you guys see that?
I think that depends on your own personal... You know, she's been great. You know, she had obviously read the script and had asked us about, her characters, the character she was playing, Viola, and she got engaged. She was really into it. It wasn't one of these, like, just show up and do the lines. She really cared about it, and that was really, really, really nice to see her do that.
Now, I obviously wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure the day she came in to record her parts, nobody was taking a day off from work. It was like full attendance at your office.
Well, yeah, there's when those types of actors are involved with the game, people are not taking days off. You're right.
we're chatting with Greg Donovan and Scott Phillips from Volition Games. We are talking about Saints Row the Third, which is obviously right around the corner. We've talked about what you can do with the pedestrians. I mean, I think people who have messed around with the franchise know that there's obviously a lot of freedom involved. And there's also a lot of ways to do basically whatever it is you want. Talk to us about some of the weaponry. I know one thing we got to mess around with, I don't know what the actual name of it was, but it was basically a pedestrian launcher. And I'm pretty sure that was DLC. Correct me if I'm wrong, but just if you would go into, I guess, the lay of the land from the weaponry standpoint.
Well, that the vehicle that you saw is Professor Genki's Manifold. That is the pre-order exclusive.
Okay, so pre-order.
Go anywhere, you'll get that. Yeah, basically that was just you drive around, shoot people out of the cannon, and have a blast. So, as with all of our weapons, you know, and all of our vehicles, that was the focus. You know, a similar vehicle we've got is the Johnny Gatmobile, which is a van, like kind of a Scooby-Doo van with a giant Johnny Gat head on the front of it. And in addition to just being a ridiculous vehicle, it's got a flamethrower on the front of it. So, you know, we add a little extra into that. Yeah, weapon-wise, we've got, I think what we've showed off previously is the Apocalypse, which is a, you know, giant Hulk-like gloves that just destroy your enemies. They turn into a pile of goo. And, you know, beyond just individual weapons that are over the top, you know, all of our weapons are upgradable. You can make them more powerful. You can add new abilities to them. You know, you can get a pistols that have explosive rounds that'll send things flying. You can have SMGs that'll light people on fire when the bullets hit them. And so all of those sorts of things play into the over the top. I think my personal favorite one is the remote control gun, where you can kind of shoot any vehicle in the world, take control of it, and then kind of cause mayhem. And everyone will think that the driver of that vehicle was what caused the mayhem.
Now, I know for myself personally, when it comes to open world games, especially like this, of a similar vein, I tend to get distracted a little bit. You know, you talked about all the weapons, everything you can do. What is going to drive the gamer to keep playing the storyline, to mess around with the missions and progress?
We took special effort this time around to make sure that players, as they go through the main narrative, the critical path, they are giving toys, whether weapons, vehicles, perks, upgrades, that keep them engaged in the storyline. It's like, what are they going to give me next? Ooh, I got this hovercraft. I can't wait to play this around. I can't wait to see what the next toy is. So we give them little breadcrumbs throughout the story that keep people engaged. That, combined with the fact that we think we have a very engaging narrative overall, it's like, okay, now we've got this militia group coming in about halfway through. I want to learn about these characters and see how they play into the plot. So we think that that is really going to help incentivize players to keep playing through the entire game.
You're going to want to try out all the new tools as you play through. You're gaining respect, which is essentially experience. And so as you play through more of the missions, you get more money, more respect, which gives you access to more upgrades. You know, things like being able to simple things like more health, being able to sprint longer, but then cool things like, you know, all of your vehicles have nitrous, or you take no explosive damage, or, you know, you can run around on fire and you don't take any damage from it. So those sorts of things, you know, you want to get those big bonuses out of the missions and use those in the open world to just have fun.
So that's our in-depth look at Saints Row the Third. The game comes out this Tuesday. We will have a review of it on next week's show. Coming up in our next segment, Christine Chubb is pretty much exploding right now because she is finally, after 2 weeks and almost a year of waiting, going to get a chance to talk about Skyrim.
It's so exciting.
We'll get her thoughts coming up next on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you?
Yeah, this is more like it.
I got this one. Anyone else got an idea what this one's from? I should play this during the first segment, because it's the theme to Battlefield 2. I thought that would be funny.
Yeah. But it's I like this. This is like really hyped up. I feel like I should be running and jumping and climbing ledges right now.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're wondering what we're doing, this is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Omen Qureshi, joined as always by Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, and Zach Cooper over the phone. We're playing some video game music coming back from our breaks into the show. Calhoun, you want to explain why?
Yeah, it was all done by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. They sent us a CD called The Greatest Video Game Music. And I've been playing this on my iPod all week, and I've been really getting into these songs. A lot of them are really well done. Maybe they made a few poor choices here and there, but overall, I think they're great. And I want to play this one because I also want to talk about the cover of the CD when you actually get it. You know, it's a guy dressed all like
military
gear. Kind of reminds me of Battlefield 3.
Yeah.
and he's sitting there and he's playing like a flaming cello, which is awesome. I mean, you gotta see this.
We'll post a picture on our blog at sportsnet590.ca.
For sure. And then when they sent me the press release, they were talking about how you can get in stores at retailers. I'm sitting there going, who buys CDs anymore? So I checked iTunes. $10 in iTunes for the entire thing. Or you can just snipe whatever songs you want. I think the music's really cool, but you can go there and check it out for yourself.
I want to put this on my car and drive to it. I'm like, I can come into work, be like, yeah, anchoring tonight. Gonna feel good. Now, it's time.
That came to an abrupt halt.
Well, it's time for an abrupt halt because I think if we don't get to Christine Chubb's review of Skyrim, she is going to jump over the table.
Play more Skyrim.
Yeah.
That's right.
but first she'd like horribly beat me up first. So let's...
I might.
Christine, Skyrim, a game that you have been looking forward to for quite some time. Your game of the year, the number one you've been looking forward to?
It was. This was even from last year when we did... on our Christmas episode when we did What Games Are You Looking Forward to the Most?
That's
number
right.
one was Skyrim.
And then we went to E3 and you got to see a little bit more.
Oh
and we
God,
went to X11
so
and you got to see a little bit more. And
yeah.
you've had it for a couple of weeks, but you just haven't been able to talk about it. So finally, give us the rundown.
Okay, well, yeah. First of all, obviously, as you know, I went into this game with some pretty big expectations. Oblivion is one of my favorite games of like all times. And when we saw the clip at E3, I literally was like, salivating to get my hands on this game. So... I'm going to say it right off the bat. Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, a must play. You have got to play this game because it is... There's so much in this game as that there's really stuff for everybody. Like, even the newest players to the series are going to be able to slip into this immense and, like, beautiful world. You begin your journey into Skyrim, which is the land of the Nords, as you do with actually all Elder Scrolls game, in custody. You then, through conversations with the prisoners, you learn that everything is not so rosy in the glorious world of Skyrim. There's kind of a massive civil war going on. And if that isn't big enough, oh, by the way, dragons are back from extinction, totally back. And you are apparently a dragonborn, which enables you to speak the language of the dragon. And you you have to now decide the fate of these beautiful, magical, destructive creatures. And that's... really just the main storyline.
I have a question that's been bugging me ever since I heard about this game. Where are the dragons coming from?
Well, that's the question. You have to figure it out. I mean, that's what they tell you is these creatures have been extinct for years. First of all, the game takes place 200 years after the end of Oblivion, where you see your first dragon. And you just kind of you learn that you have to figure out why they're back. Are you the dragonborn bringing them back, or are you the dragonborn because they are back? It's very exciting. It's like a
very, chicken and egg question.
It is a little bit.
It's very philosophical.
So there's not only just that as the main storyline. There are side quests, miscellaneous quests, there are guild quests, and if that's not enough, you can spend your time learning new trades now, like crafting weapons, mining ores, cooking, and that's all while you're not wandering around the massive map looking for locations, fighting bandits and other wild creatures. So basically, it's... huge. Like, this game is hours and hours and hours and hours of time. And once you're in Skyrim, you kind of become absorbed in it. Like, there's so much going on in this game, and it's so beautiful. It becomes your life.
I can tell this is the first time I've seen you in, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
Chubb did the old, I'm sick the next 2 weeks.
So now I'm going to get into a little bit of the technical aspects of the game. In many ways, this is a typical Elder Scrolls game for both good and bad. Some of the new changes they've made have really streamlined the play, though, which is good. The new menu system that they have is really well laid out. It's practical and it's easy to maneuver through. You can quickly jump from the weapons to magic to maps to skills just simply by moving the stick back and forth, which is a nice change because before it used to be toggling through all these different maps, and it was overly complicated. So now it's really easy. You can get yourself around really quickly and get back to gameplay.
And the favorites are exceptional as well.
The favorites are fantastic. Like, you can really zip around quickly, and especially when you're in a really heavy duty battle that's just come upon you, you can pull whatever you want right out of thin air. Upgrading your weapons is actually a really cool thing that they've done as well. No longer do your weapons and armor constantly need repair after every battle, which is good, since sometimes in the middle of nowhere it was hard to find that repair hammer and you were just going to get smoked because suddenly your weaponry was down to 45%. You can now upgrade, you can actually upgrade it yourself with things that you buy and things that you find, with proper tools, and meaning now your favorite sword or bow can actually stay with you through most of the game if you want it to. You can just keep upgrading it with a better skill. which I think is great.
Is there one that you would suggest us going for, if, like, right out the gate?
You know what? It totally depends how you want to play this game. That's the thing about it. I went in thinking I was going to play the way that I had played in Oblivion, and it was totally different. I ended up using a whole new set of skills that I didn't think was what I was going to do. And it's really what works best for you. A lot of people like the magic. There's lots of magic. A lot of people like weaponry. There's tons of weaponry. Like, you really can do whatever you want. Spells. Obviously, spells are back.
I was about to say, like, you were telling me before we taped and over the last few days that there are some wicked spells you can do.
Yeah, the spells are amazing. Now, instead of just having one spell, you can now hold up two hands and have a spell in each hand, or you can put the same spell in both hands to come up with this huge flame or whatever it is that you want to, whatever spell it is you have. So instead of just shooting, and also instead of just shooting off like one random fireball, you can hold that trigger down and you can blast things with whatever your spell is, which is great if you have a whole bunch of people coming at you. And it also works really well if you want to upgrade your skills. Plus, now you have these things called shouts, which are the language of the dragon. And there's actually going to be 20 of these shouts. And when you learn these words and when you complete the shout, it can do some serious damage. Like, we're talking destroying, like, bringing down the wraths of the heavens on your enemy.
Sorry, you lost me for a second. How do you complete a shout?
Well, what you do, there's three parts to it. You learn the words to it, and okay. Then you have to have to slay a dragon and take the soul of it, and then...
You monster?
I know, it's kind of evil.
And then that's it?
Just slay a dragon? And
whatevs.
Do that on my way to work.
And each one is different, and sometimes it's even little things like it allows you to move forward really quickly, or to push people away, or fire, or...
So it's the Force?
Kind of. some of them are.
But they're
great. The shouts are really a fantastic addition, because even if you don't want to use a lot of magic, like your gameplay is largely combat, the shouts are always an option, and they come in super handy. One of the best changes about Skyrim 2 is advancing your skills. Like, no longer do you have to decide earlier on what things you want to advance, but now, logically, you advance your skills through doing things, which is great because, like I said, I found I played the game much differently than I thought I would. So had I chosen my skill set in the beginning, I would have been basically screwed 3 hours in and thought, oh, this is horrible. So now if you want a better bow, you shoot the bow. If you like magic, then the more you use that, the better you are at it, which is great, and it makes logical sense. And that's what I like about the game, is they've added a lot of logic to a lot of their advancements. Also, one of the things I like, you don't have to sleep to level up anymore. So if you're in the middle of a big battle, you can level up right in the middle of it, which can be awesome if you're a little bit in a situation that's out of control, and suddenly you're like, oh, wait, I can level up, and that one skill that you're using suddenly gets a giant bump. So it's much more better. It's easier, and it makes gameplay a lot more interesting, and fantastic.
The judge is also
like, I wish our listeners could see just how excited she is talking about, like, arms are flailing and there's like a giant smile on your face. I mean, you can't talk enough about this game.
It's great, but like I said, the game isn't perfect. There were a couple of really annoying glitches I got into. There were actually a few glitches that came up that I couldn't complete.
From a Bethesda game, I'm shocked.
I know, that's the thing, is I couldn't complete the quest, a few quests because of the glitches. Some of them froze my system, some of them shut everything down.
That's not good.
I'm hoping that these are things that'll just be amended in the patch. However, it is oddly a strange consistency with Elder Scrolls games, where these are problems that just keep coming up over and over again.
How often do these problems happen to you? Was it like a random occurrence every once in a while, or did it happen like every hour?
No. It was really random. Like, there weren't a lot of them, but when it did, it was like, oh. Like, one time I was just walking through a door, and I just never came back. It was just scrolling and scrolling, so I had to shut everything down. But these things happen, you know, and a game of this massive size... it's not always going to be perfect. And also, there was another weird problem with the soundtrack, which is fantastic, by the way. But occasionally when you're having a conversation with somebody, the music gets louder and louder and louder, and you can't hear what the character is telling you. So it's a really good option to turn on the subtitles. Mm. That way, in case you miss what they're saying, because sometimes other characters will also chat at the same time. So there's a little bit of intermixing, and it gets a little noisy at times. So turn on the subtitles just to make sure you don't miss anything.
I want to say one thing before Chubb wraps up, because, you know, right off the top, she said it's a must play. I would completely agree. I'm not nearly as far as she is into the game. I'm only about 5 hours, but I was also looking forward to this game, and it's not not a must play because it's not like you can go out and rent it and really grasp the experience. This is a game that will take your soul and basically make love to it if you're down with like the dungeon crawlers, the action adventure RPGs. They do so many things so well, and it's one of those games where, you know, like you talked about, Christine, you know, you can sit down and think you're going to play for maybe an hour, and then 4 hours go by and I should have been at work about 90 minutes ago. But it's great, and you know, I'm anxious to, you know, just get my hands back on Skyrim and get back into the world of Skyrim and explore some more, because if you see it, you can go there, and it's yeah, something special.
You know, it's funny, we always talk about on this show, one of the big things when you're dropping 60 or 70 bucks on a game is replayability, and it sounds like this game has got like almost infinite amounts of replayability because you can just keep going and going.
Well, yeah, I mean, the miscellaneous quest amount load are staggering. Like, if you go into your list of quests, they have the main storyline and the sub-storyline categories in one, and then there's just one that says miscellaneous, and you can have just tons of quests in there of things to do where it's like kill a bandit, you know, free a mine, find a charm, all the typical kind of Elder Scrolls quests. But they can take up forever. Like, nothing is ever simple. And it's not just, oh, well, I'm going to go and get this little thing. There's always something. And the caves here, like, the look of this game is so beautiful. The caves have all been individually designed. Some of them, like, you're walking down this one little creek and you open up and there's a huge waterfall. Like, it's, at times, there were times in this game where I literally stopped and just scrolled around because it was so beautiful. Like, the guys who've designed this game really took it up to a level that I have never seen in an RPG before. It is
just a couple of guys behind it, too.
Yeah, one or two.
So judging by the listening to you talk now for the last 8 or 10 minutes, I'm going to guess this game is going to get like a 1 out of 10 from you. But just to give it an official score, why don't you tell us, what's your score on this game?
I'm going to give it a 9. It was beautiful, and I want to be playing it right now.
I think mentally you are there.
I really am.
All right, so that is Skyrim, the long-awaited game for Christine Chubb. She gives it a 9 out of 10. One more time, you do have a chance this week to win a Kinect Sports Season 2 prize pack, including a branded bag, a rally towel, and the new Kinect Sports Season 2 for the Xbox 360. All you have to do is enter the code Kinect, that's K-I-N-E-C-T, in the fan club at sportsnet590.ca before 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, November 27th, for 590 points and your chance to win the Kinect Sports Season 2 prize pack.
And quickly, we forgot to mention that the PlayStation Lounge is going to be opening up this weekend downtown at the EB Games. I believe the address is 267 Yonge Street. It's basically like a door to south of the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yonge and Dundas.
Yonge and Dundas. They're going to have their own PlayStation Lounge, which will basically be a showcase of all the PlayStation games and stuff like that.
Yeah, basically Xbox has one, and so PlayStation now has one as well.
And during the grand opening, they're actually going to also have Luke Shen there between the hours of 2 and 3:30. If you want to get an autograph from Luke Shen, he'll be there.
Cool.
I don't know what else they have planned, but it's this weekend, this Sunday, I believe
it's Sunday, 15th. Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it's Sunday afternoon, 2 to 5 is when the grand opening is going to happen, and everyone can go down there and actually check it out. And I'm going to take us out with a little bit more music here. This one's going to be from Mass Effect 3.
All right, we should mention that coming up on next week's show, we'll have a review of Assassin's Creed Revelations, Saints Row the Third, and Super Mario 3DS. But that's all the time we have for this week. So for Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, and Zach Cooper on the phone, I am Moen Qureshi, and this is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.